missing Andrew.
Just Andrew.
Yeah.
Is Andrew. Anthony on? I don't see Anthony. Am I missing?
So the new board, advisory board list that I have is Kim, Evan, Andrew, Rich, Christopher, Greg, and Kevin. And Andrew told me he wasn't going to make it. And so Kevin is the only one that I'm missing, but we do have a quorum, so we can get started. If Kevin logs on, then we'll add him.
So let me make sure I got this right. Kim, Andrew, Rich, myself, Anthony, Evan, and Chris. Is that right? And Kevin is missing.
Probably good to do introductions.
So I'd like to do introductions tonight a little different because there's new people on here. I don't know everybody. I don't know you at all. And so what I'd like to do is I'll call out your name. If you can just give us a couple of minutes of who you are and where transportation fits in, and just so we know who's on this group, because I don't, except for what I've heard, except for Kim, because you ran for office and I saw your thing, but it's still, everybody else maybe didn't read it. So be a good chance to tell everybody who you are. And so, Kim, you're first on my list, so why don't you go ahead and say who you are?
That's fair, right, for all the people. Kim Bria, Transportation Advisory Board member. And I was on the advisory board as we were just finishing up our 2016 transportation system plan. So that was kind of a fun year to dig into all the criteria that we're currently working through. And I have a very strong transportation background. I've touched it from the office to the field. So I think this is a fun group because this is a great nerdy topic. So hopefully everyone else feels the same way about transportation.
Okay, Rich.
Yeah, my name's Rich Faith. I'm a 19-year resident of West Lynn. I think this is my third year on the Transportation Advisory Board. And for what it's worth, I'm a retired land use planner, among other things, but no, I've worked in the planning for 40 years, now retired.
Okay, and let's see, Alvin?
Hello, everybody. My name's Evan Garish. I've been in West Lynn for 5 years now. Lived in Oregon essentially all of my life, a couple years down in Texas, but pretty much a lifelong Oregonian. Let's see, family-wise, married. I've got two kids, a 7-year-old and a 4-year-old. Transportation, I've been in the transportation industry for about 15 years. I was a consultant for just shy of a decade, doing a lot of transportation projects. I guess I should say I'm a licensed engineer, civil engineer, specifically a geotechnical engineer. So was a consultant doing lots of transportation projects along with some other heavy civil projects. And then for the past 5 years, I've been with the Federal Highway Administration, but not your kind of standard FHWA that provides oversight. I work for Western Federal Lands Highway Division, and we design and build roads in national parks, national forests, and to increase access to other federal lands. Obviously, here, I am here as a private citizen, quite happy to be on the board. And looking forward to getting to know everybody.
Great. Chris?
Hi, I'm Chris Groshko. I work for Advantage Credit Union. I'm their chief retail banking officer. And I've been in West Lynn for 3.5 years. For 26 years before that, I've lived in Manhattan, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. I do not have a transportation background, and I'm very interested in this committee. I currently serve as vice president for the Rosemont Summit Neighborhood Association, and transportation comes up a lot. It's a huge part of our budget for the county, and just curious in contributing in however manner I can and learning more. Thank you.
Okay, and Anthony, is he on? See his face. No, Anthony?
No.
No, Anthony's not with us anymore.
Oh, he's not? Okay, I didn't cross him out.
Yep, Anthony's out. Andrew's not here.
Okay.
And I don't see Kevin.
Okay.
Either.
Maybe. So that leaves me, I guess. So at two meetings ago, I was told that everybody has to take a turn being chair for a year, and so somehow I became the chair. I have a almost 40-year career in public works, and I've lived in West Lynn for 36 years, so which I guess the longest. I retired 8 years ago after serving as the chief executive for the Tuolumne Valley Water District, which is out on the west side of the Portland area. And before that, I was 12 and a half years as Gresham's public works director and city engineer for that time. And I was in Newburgh public works director before that, and Sandy's public works director and city engineer before that. And I've served in a variety of roles in West Lynn. Kim and I were talking about it last night. I was on the library board for 12 and a half years. I was on the utility advisory board. I was on the 10th Street task force that you put together way back, that must have been 10 years ago. Today, I volunteer with the American Society of Civil Engineers, where I served as their president in 2013. And I chaired their Committee on America's Infrastructure. We just released our latest report card on the infrastructure. And I spend my time testifying around the country, doing interviews on TV, radio, and so forth on the need to invest in our infrastructure. And so it just seemed like I ought to be doing that kind of thing in my own town if I'm going to go around the world and do the same thing. Transportation was always my, I always wanted to be a highway engineer, but I never got to. Did everything but that. So I never got to do it. Kevin, we're going around just introducing ourselves because we don't know one another. And so if you want to just take a couple minutes and tell us who you are and you know,
indeed. About you. Yeah, sorry, I'm late. I'm in Yahatz, and for some reason they don't believe in functioning Wi-Fi at this hotel. So you wanted me to do that right now?
Yeah, introduce yourself.
All right. Yeah. Sounds good. So yeah, I'm Kevin Bonington. I'm born and raised in West Lynn, live in the Sunset area. I'm a real estate broker right now. And I felt a strong need to kind of get involved with the city and what's going on and just kind of have my voice out there and do what I can to help rather than just kind of sitting at home thinking about what should be done and commenting. I wanted to be a part of it. So I think I'm going to be looking at things largely from the real estate perspective. And that will probably inform a lot of my my thoughts on things we'll go over here. And then on top of that, just something that I really, really interested me in West Lynn and transportation and everything was noticing the complete lack of access to TriMet for the most part, just how limited that is. And I can't count how many hours of my life have been wasted sitting at Willamette Falls Drive and 43. So
you're not alone.
I know there's lots of people with me all the time there. That's the whole point. So, yeah.
Welcome. Well, good. Welcome. Okay, so Lance, do you want to tell us, does everybody know about Lance besides being our public works director and city engineer?
So, yes.
Before you go to Lance, I don't think Joel introduced himself.
Oh, my apologies.
He might be on the part of your screen that you don't see.
No, he's there.
Okay.
Joel, I'm sorry.
No worries. Well, I'm not part of the board here, but Lance had asked us to come and do a presentation tonight and kind of let you know what our findings are. But my name is Joel Condor, and I'm the Senior Project Manager at Capital Asset and Pavement Services. And a long-time Oregonian, raised in Alaska until I was 15 and then moved to Salem. And I've been in Salem since the early 70s, went to school at South Salem High School, Oregon State University. Go Beavs, Sweet 16. So we haven't been able to say that for a long time. So, I'm retired. I was 4 years with Multnomah County in the road department, and then 27 years with Marion County in the road department. Retired about 10 years ago as the construction manager. My history with West Lynn goes back quite a ways. It goes back to 1993, I believe, when West Lynn came to Marion County and asked Marion County to help them set up a pavement management system. And so I was given that opportunity in 1993 to do that. And for the last 27, 28 years, I have been back every few years to rate your road. So I sometimes people tell me they live in West Lynn. I go, yeah, what road and what street? And I know, oh, yeah, I know right where that is. And kind of blow people's mind. But I know your city very well. I've been up and down every single street at least 12, 13 times. So anyway, so and that's so why I'm here this evening is to talk about some of the findings that we did last time we did your payment evaluations, which was about 1 year ago.
Thanks, Joel. Okay, Lance, go ahead.
So Lance Calvert, I'm the Public Works Director and City Engineer for the City of West Lynn, also a resident of West Lynn. You know, unfortunately, my college alma mater got knocked out in the first round of the tournament at the University of Missouri, so I have no affiliation to Oregon or Oregon State, although my daughter is now attending the University of Oregon, so I guess I have to champion the Ducks. But so anyway, I've been the Public Works Director here for several years. I feel like this committee, like between real estate, legal, and engineering, we are probably one of the best small consulting firms, if somebody were to hire us in the state, based on the background of everybody here, including planning and communications. So thank you all for participating in this group. I would say that, you know, as my experience here has developed with these advisory boards, you know, I always, you know, let people know that the, you know, sort of the purpose and mission of the advisory boards is to give citizen input to the council on the topics that are identified, you know, usually in the title or name of the group. In this case, transportation. I think that people tend to gravitate to things that they know and are familiar with, but I also always encourage advisory board members to know that all citizen input is welcome on all advisory boards. You are a reflection of this community. That's what the council's looking for in your feedback and input, and not just technical expertise. So, you know, people that, you know, have served a long time in certain advisory board capacities, I always encourage them to branch out and try other advisory boards and move, you know, sometimes into areas that we're not 100% familiar with, because we really are all are residents of the community, and the council wants to hear your voice regardless of your level of expertise in a particular subject matter. If you have a question about it, probably other residents do too. And so that's really what we're trying to do, is capture citizen input from all members of the community, all neighborhoods, all areas of the community, and really channel that to the council so they can hear that directly. Because obviously the council is volunteers also, and they can't do everything. And so they rely on advisory boards for feedback and for guidance. So as your staff liaison to this advisory board, I am here to help facilitate the conversation and provide my knowledge of the community and the city to the group, as well as, you know, do all the, you know, recording and follow up for everything from meeting minutes to questions or anything that the group may have for staff. The other thing I always tell advisory boards, and since we have new members, I'll repeat this. You know, you guys are really advisors to the council. So any requests or any information that you would have or want or need, I always say make a motion and send it to council through your chair. And then the council will take that under consideration and advisement, and hopefully get back to you. We do have a council liaison, Mary Baumgartner, I think, is the liaison now for this group. I don't see her on tonight's meeting, but I also know that Mary's involved in a lot of advisory boards and different committees, and so her time is stretched very thin. I think she has a lot of faith in this group, but Mary is also available to you all. If you have any questions or anything, please channel that to Mary, and she will carry that message to the rest of the city council. When it comes to, you know, requests from staff, I also say if it's something, you know, easy or relatively accessible, then I will certainly share that with the group, or bring in individuals like Joel, who did our pavement condition report for the group to review. But if it requires a lot of staff time and effort, that would also be a request of council, or a budget, then that would be a request of council to work through that process, and then direct, and then the council would direct the city manager, who would then direct me or my staff or others in the organization. So that's sort of the chain of command and how it all works. And if anybody has any questions that's new or has been here a long time, feel free to reach out to me, and I will directly, and you can email me. Hopefully everybody has my email and or my assistant's email, Morgan. I'm also sometimes really hard to get a hold of, and Morgan is my go-to as well, and she will help facilitate any questions you all may have. So with that, I think we're ready to move on.
All right, thanks, Lance. I appreciate that. First, we have the review and approval of our January 21st summary notes. Are there any corrections to the minutes of January 21st? If not, I'll entertain a motion for approval.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. All right, motion carries. Before we move on to business, were there any amendments to the agenda? Okay, then Lance, I'm gonna turn it over to you for the next one. Is you and Joel on pavement condition index. This was something the committee brought up, I think, two meetings. Well, we didn't have a meeting in February, I don't think. So our January meeting, that we wanted to hear about it. A couple of us feel pretty strongly, or actually probably everyone does, that our streets we paid for, we paid a lot of money for them, and we want to make sure that they stay in good shape, like painting our house. So we wanted to hear a report. So I'll turn it over to you, Lance.
Thank you, Greg. Like you said, Joel is here to go over. Oh, I'm muted. I got to get used to turning myself on and off. Joel is here to go over the pavement condition report. As he mentioned, we do for pavement analysis, it's been consistently the city's policy to hire a third party to do that, so that it's a very fair process, and there's hopefully no bias put in there. The staff will review that work that the consultant puts together, and help facilitate that. Typically, that report comes to the Transportation Advisory Board and then to council. However, with COVID and everything else going on, it got sort of sidetracked, and it's been a little while, but Joel's here to give you all an update. The council, I think, has already seen the presentation or heard from Joel. I'm assuming Joel will be using the same information that he provided to the city council. So at this point, I will give it the microphone over to him. And I think, Joel, you should be able to share your screen if you want, or I think I have the presentation as well if you want.
If you have it, Lance, it'd be great if you could share it.
Now, let me see if I can track that.
This is my first WebEx meeting. Usually we're Zoom or GoToMeeting or something. So you got it. You share it. I can step through it. Probably only take me about 10 minutes to step through it.
And let me, I'll share my screen.
Okay.
Can everybody see that? And Joel, you should just be able to tell me when to move the slide.
Why don't you go ahead and move to the next slide here. I've done this presentation quite a few times to the Westland City Council, like I said, over the last 28 years. I think I've been up there every couple of years and done this for them. So, and basically, you know, for you folks that are new to this or new to this board, a payment management system is pretty much just a computerized analysis tool that we use. And what we do is we go out there and we rate all the roads. We count all the distresses that are on the road, the cracking, the patching, and all that kind of stuff. And we put it all into a database, and it crunches out a number called a PCI, or a pavement condition index. And that number is obviously 0 to 100, a 0 being a road that's just about gravel, to a road that's 100, which is a brand new road. So the software that we're using is called Street Saver. It's comes from an organization down in the San Francisco Bay Area. Up here it's called Metro, down there it's called MTC, the Metropolitan Transportation Commission. So it's public domain software. It's the preferred software here on the West Coast, especially up there in the Portland area. We do all of your neighbors. We do Oregon City, Gladstone, Milwaukee, Oregon City, Clackamas County, just about everybody in the entire state is using it, which is a good thing, because the Association of Oregon Cities, the League of Cities, and the Association of Oregon Counties can take all this data from every city and county and dump it into one database and go to the legislature with quantified results, and they're apples to apples. So you guys are using the right software. So Lance, you want to go ahead and move ahead to the next one there? And this is your current PCI, Pavement Condition Index. Citywide is a 72. So that puts you in a good range, pretty much. You can see, you know, how much of your network you've got. You know, most of your city is over 80% of your city, of course, is residential streets. You know, only have about 19 miles of arterials and collectors, and the rest of it is all residentials. And you can see what kind of percentage of the network is in 68% of your network's in good condition, 19% is in fair, and so on. So very, very poor. You can see just a very small part of your network's in very poor condition. So overall, you guys are doing pretty well there. The pavement deterioration curve is kind of the one I call the pay me now or pay me later. So it really just kind of pushes you, the pavement management system pushes you towards doing preventive maintenance instead of letting everything fall off and doing major rehab work. So that's why I talk about the pay me now or pay me later. You can see if you catch these roads when they're in good or fair shape, you know, you're doing that for, you know, pennies on the dollar compared if it fails. And so typically, you know, I don't see it listed on there, but we're talking, that's usually anywhere from $3 to $7 a square yard you're doing preventive maintenance, where if it falls down there, you can get upwards of well over $100 a square yard if you have to rehab the entire road. So that's where the pavement management system really points you to, taking care of the roads that are in good shape and keeping them there. Go ahead there. So we ran a couple of scenarios, different scenarios through the pavement management system. And the first one we ran is the unconstrained needs. This is basically the blank check theory. If the city of Westland had all the money in the world to spend on their roads, unlimited budget, this is what it would suggest we do. This is how much we should spend. And I think as we look at this, that's about $13 million over 5 years you should be spending, which is about, I think, about double what you're actually spending right now. So, but running the unconstrained, this is what it says, a little over $13 million is what you should spend. And that would get your street network in the optimum condition where it'd be the least expensive to maintain moving forward. The next scenario is scenario two. This is your current investment level. And currently the city is spending 1.5 per year, or 7.6 over this 5 year period. So, if you keep maintaining, you know, this 1.52 over the next 5 years, you'll see your PCI pretty much is staying even. It's not really going anywhere. You're just kind of holding ground with it. So The next scenario is scenario three, and this is the one that's most common that a lot of public works directors ask me to run. It's to increase the PCI. We can't spend 14 or 13 plus million in 5 years, but give us a target that we can that's attainable. And so this is what scenario three is: just increase our PCI a few points up to 80. And you can see you have to spend about 1.9 million per year. So it's about halfway up there to that 13 million that they were suggesting. So this is a realistic goal. Scenario four is the zero funding. And for any of you folks who've been involved with the City of West Lynn very long, you're still, out of my 161 clients, the only agency, and I bring you guys up a lot when I do these presentations, that actually run a zero funding budget. You guys did that a few years back. I want to think when that was. It was back in the late 2000s, I believe. And I was working with a guy by the name of Gary Park in there, and he had me run zero budget because you guys were spending zero money on your street. So, and I think if you look back at some of the historical numbers, you'll see where your PCI took a huge dip, and we're on the right trajectory now. But you guys actually did run a zero funding. This is what will happen. And I did this presentation when the city council was thinking about doing this, and they actually did it. I showed them what the effect would be. And so here's today's effect. What would it be? You can see those red bars are your deferred maintenance. And so today you can see you have a little bit under 8 million in deferred maintenance. And if you spend zero over the next 5 years, that number grows to over 14 million. So that just kind of gives you an idea. If you make this decision, this is that crystal ball. Say if you do it, this is what the long-term effect is going to be. And you can see your overall network PCI goes down to 65. And if it went down to 65, you'd probably be one of the lowest city in the Portland metro area for PCI. You would officially have the Portland metro's worst streets, not considering Portland. The current PCI condition, this is just a map, you know, showing you exactly what's what. You can see the green roads are good and the blue roads are good. And then you start getting down into the fair and the poor and the very poor. Anything that's red, of course, is very poor. Anything that orange is poor condition. So the orange and the reds are really the roads you've let go, or those very old roads, pretty much. The next one, the scenario PCI, this is your unconstrained needs again. That scenario one that I talked about, if you had a blank check, you can see pretty much all those orange and yellow roads go away with that blank check. So, and you can see there's still a couple of them, but that's only because it's a five-year scenario. If you ran this thing out to 10, 15, 20 years, those eventually would all go away in time. So the next one is the current funding level. This, again, you see a lot of your green roads, but you can see the red and the orange and a few yellows in there. And this is what would happen if you ran the current, keep continuing to run your current funding level for the next 5 years. This is what your city would look like. See, and again, you're over 80% of your roads in really good condition. So the next scenario is that PCI increased to few points up to 80. So don't really see a lot of difference between that last map and this one, but there is a slight impact. And the last scenario is a zero funding. And now you can see if you were to make that choice to go to a zero funding for the next 5 years, you can see how many red and orange roads and a lot of yellows that would happen there to your city. So you can see the impact of what would happen. So, and here's just a snapshot of all four scenarios kind of run together, kind of showing you know, how much you're spending on the average, you know, your total budget for 5 years, the PCI, what happens, the current condition, you know, then after 5 years, that piece after 5 years, you can definitely see that stepping down. And you can see what percentage of your network in 5 years, if you go to that zero funding out there, you know, barely half of your network's in good condition compared to, you know, today, where over 80% of it is. So that's just kind of a summary of all those scenarios. So that's basically my snapshot of your pavement condition of your streets there in the city of West Lynn. I'll be glad to answer any questions if anybody has any.
Do we have any questions for Joel?
I just have an observation, I guess. I was actually surprised at how good a condition, according to this index, because you know, to the casual observer, or just as you drive around or walk around this community, the roads do not look like they're in that good of shape. I'm really surprised that you're saying that they're at a 72 right now. As in, that's an overall average. I guess it just doesn't seem that way when you go out and walk around and see the pavement up close.
One of the things that's really affecting your overall network, Rich, is the fact that you have so many newer streets. And every time you add in a new subdivision and newer streets, that pulls your overall PCI up. And up there on top of the hill, you have so much growth in the last few years. I think you have so many good streets up there, they're pulling so many bad streets, the average up a little bit. So,
well, that may be true of new streets and subdivisions, but I think the collectors and arterials in this town are suffering, it appears to me.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and I guess that would raise the question of the numbers you showed, Joel. I go back a slide, the one that had the percentage there. No, I guess it's, I don't know what slide it is. The one that showed how many, that one. So of that, what is it, 19 miles of street that are arterial and collector, what is their rating? In other words, if that was the only thing you were looking at, what would that PCI be?
Well, we can definitely run that report real quick. And I mean, I can't do it right now, of course, but I can run that for you and find out. You also got to remember that some of your arterials in your town are state highways. So,
right. So I was just talking about the ones we have responsible.
Okay, good. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Don't forget that Highway 43 is owned and operated by the state of Oregon and not part of our network and not included in our PCI index.
Understood.
We actually do include it in there. One of your public works directors many years ago asked me to add that in. We don't use it for the analysis for the budgeting part of it, but it is, that information is available because he wanted to have something in. He wanted to be armed with some information when he dealt with the ODOT folks. So it is in there. So, but if that's the number, I'd be glad to run that report tomorrow and get that information to you, what your arterials and collectors are.
We have other questions.
I'm kind of interested in at what point at what condition level do you go from microsurfacing or slurry seals, things like that, towards an overlay, and then at what point do you drop down to full reconstruction?
There are some there's some PCI breakpoints in there, and I think we're currently in the right around 70. If the road condition is above 70, then it makes itself available for preventive maintenance, such as your microsurfaces and your slurry seal, crack sealing, and stuff like that. Once a road falls down into the middle to lower 60s, the program has a tendency to let it keep dropping for a little while until it calls for like a thin overlay or a medium, you know, 2 to 3 inch overlay. There's kind of the pavement management system's kind of weird that way, because when it gets to the bottom of the decision tree, it says, you know what, you're just kind of outside the window for preventive maintenance, so we're just going to let it slide down into that overlay category. And once it does, I mean, considering it's in the overlay, we don't need it to overlay it today. We can let it go for 2, 3, 4 years.
Sure.
Keep those good roads in good condition, because it's going to get a 2-inch overlay today or in 3 years. So that's kind of the thinking. And then as far as that other question about reconstruction, typically those are roads that have a PCI that fall below 30.
Okay. Joe, I have another question. Yeah, another question. So what of these different categories in this legend, if a street has significant alligatoring, is that the correct term, Lance? When it's all breaks up, alligatoring, where would that fall then under in your legend? As good, poor?
It really depends on how much of it's recorded and how big the street is. Because any crack that's in the wheel path is considered alligatoring. And so that's a load-related distress. So it would look at the entirety of the section of the street and look at how much of it has that on it. and just a little bit that's in the wheel pass. A lot of times it'll call for localized repair. Maybe you want to do a dig out, fix that area, patch it, and then put a seal coat over it. If it's got significant amount of it, obviously it moves out of the seal coating and falls into the overlay category.
The reason I ask that and bring that up is because I drive Salamo Road every day practically on my way to home. And so I'm most familiar with that. And, you show here is it's a good level, the predominantly the blue. And again, just, to the non-trained eye, just, based on my own observations and the amount of alligatoring I see on that street, I just would think it would rate lower than that, just out of, sort of my observations.
Are you seeing that mostly in the wheel paths?
Well, that's a good question. I haven't really paid that close, but probably, that may be the case.
So you have a road that's that wide, and then you have a foot or two of it going down the wheel path. You're talking less than 10% of the road usually is showing signs of alligatoring. So on those decisions, it'll probably point you towards doing some kind of preventive maintenance. And then that's when the human element has to come in and go, okay, it's mostly in the wheel path, so maybe we just need to do a grind and inlay because a majority of the road's still in pretty good shape. It's just the wheel paths are taking a beating. So that's where, someone in Lance's position would have to step in over the pavement management system and say, hey, no, this is the way we need to fix that. So you always got to keep that human intervention in. This isn't a cure-all for everything. This is just a network-level tool to point you in the right direction for maintenance and rehab.
Got it.
Yeah, a couple things I would add on there is the human element is a critical piece. The particularly with the city's water infrastructure, because there may be areas that are, like particularly where you see these red, very poor condition streets. The reason they're in that shape and haven't been addressed probably for several years is that the underlying water line has failed or failing. And so to do a significant reconstruction or rehabilitation of that road would require removal and replacement of the water line because the water line wouldn't be able to withstand the vibratory effort of reconstructing the road. So there are other factors that go into the play of which streets get addressed when. Not only certainly this tool is an important part of that, but there are other elements that come into play as well, and that could be stuff like waterline projects. It could be stuff like pending development. It could be other planned city capital projects in or around the area. Oftentimes when we do road work, we'll try and cluster that work so that we minimize mobilization, which is another expense. We don't want to do one block in one place and then mobilize and then do another block across town and, pay a lot for just simply picking up and moving the contractor and his equipment from one area of town to the other. So a lot more goes into that human element. The other thing is when we get to starting to identify streets that need or are needing some work, we'll look too at, was the street previously slurry sealed? Is slurry seal a good candidate for that street if it's been previously slurry sealed? What does that look like? Sometimes slurry seal in the past in West Lynn was used inappropriately as sort of a patch to cover up the failed streets. And sort of hide the problems, and so we want to address that as we see that. It just depends on the nature and location, and again, like you're saying, that human element becomes a critical aspect in how we approach each individual location.
got a question for you, Lance. When budgets are set for how much money to allocate for street maintenance, is the decision primarily based on simply how much money is available, and that is decided that we're going to spend all that we have for street maintenance on that, or is it more a function of, well, we're at a 72 TCI on the index, we're satisfied with just staying there, and we don't want to put any more money into it, we're not interested in increasing that PCI. What's the major factor that goes into allocating funds for street maintenance?
Staff recommendation is always pavement maintenance. Basically, maintenance is the primary function in a community of this type and size and scale, so maintenance is where most of our dollars go. There are always competing dollars for our limited funds. The city has a street maintenance fee that covers a significant amount of our annual budget for basic pavement maintenance. The city also funds our streets operations with the motor fuel tax revenue, and that is a equally important part of our maintenance budget. All of your public works staff, myself included, we are all 100% funded through either the motor fuel tax or your utility bill fees, like the road maintenance fee. So snow plowing, those kinds of things are also funded from that. No property tax or other tax dollars come to public works. All those dollars go to operations like the library and the police department and general government. And so usually the question or competition is, do we fund things like pavement maintenance, or do we defer some of that money to fund capital improvements like sidewalks or safe routes to school projects or any other type of road improvements that the city council will be interested in, and then it really becomes a question of the council as to where they want to direct those funds.
So to that end, Lance, when I've lived here long enough to remember when we put the street maintenance fee in, the goal was that, and we were sold on it as citizens, that our goal was that we'd have a pavement condition of 80. And Joel, you gave us a chart that actually showed what it takes to get to 80. So the bigger question, Lance, is what's your plan as a staff person? Where do you see it going? Are you looking to, what would it take if you had to raise the street maintenance fee to get to your 80? We need to spend another $400,000 a year. Could you even get there given the water lines and all the other things you talk about? Is this, frankly, given all the other things that influence street maintenance, is as good as it's going to get here in Westland?
Well, those are great. I think that's a great question. I don't know if I have a perfect crystal ball answer. Certainly, we are rate constrained, any particularly in the water fund, we have the lowest water rates in the entire Portland metro area. We have deferred a lot of maintenance because of that. We also, it's certainly our goal to advocate as staff to the city council to strive to get to 80, and then it's their decision making that goes into whether or not to significantly change or raise rates for the street maintenance fee. I can tell you that right now the street fund took a massive hit with the ice damage and response. That's all coming from the street fund. That's not coming from general tax dollars. And so, you know, that every dollar that goes to those kinds of expenses is a dollar that's not going to pavement maintenance. And I think a lot of people that aren't necessarily familiar with this, you know, model and cost and issue don't really understand how expensive streets are to maintain, including sometimes newly elected councilors who, you know, see this, you know, really big pot of money in street maintenance and relative to other budget and items and a lot of other competing requests, and they want to, you know, is there a way to slide that money over to these other competing needs? And I think for the most part in the time that I have been here, the council has been pretty good at keeping true to keeping the money in pavement maintenance. I think what Joel referred to prior to my arrival here was a few years of the council either not doing pavement maintenance and deferring that money to other projects or issues, or simply not having the money because they didn't have that street fee available to them. And, you know, when I started, our tax revenue, our motor fuel tax revenue was the largest portion of our revenue to fund street and street maintenance, street operations and maintenance. Today, the street pavement maintenance fee is the largest revenue source. And as Greg well knows, there has not been a federal increase in the national motor fuel tax, I think, since 93. Which was at that time, I think, raised by Clinton, and then before that was raised by Reagan. This is an infrastructure is a key topic at a federal level. We're seeing that right now at with the Biden administration, and that really trickles down all the way down to the local level. So you see that deferral of maintenance that's been occurring in our street networks, not just here in West Lynn, but regionally and statewide. And that's largely because our motor fuel tax revenue does not increase with inflation. It stays static. And so inflation erodes motor fuel tax revenue. Anyway, long story short, I think... you know, certainly our goal to get to 80. Certainly, we are actually in this year's road program tackling some of the streets that have failed water lines. We are doing waterline replacement project right now as we speak. It's just sort of a matter of getting there. And then obviously projects like the bond project help a lot because that helps in areas like the bonds are our property taxes, and they pay for things like the Main Street project and that effort. We'll continue to just sort of march along these paths and hopefully get better and not worse.
So I guess the question I'd throw out to our committee, because one of the things, as you point out, Lance, one of our jobs is to advise the city council. And, you know, because they do want to hear from citizens because we're the ones that are paying the bill when it gets done. So I would throw out to you a discussion of, is any interest in having Lance look at what would a 6 or 7 year program look like where the street maintenance fee would get raised a little bit every year until we get up to that amount we need to spend in order to get to our 80 PCI. And I would just throw that out to the group to consider. Maybe think about it. Maybe the next meeting, think about it. Lance, maybe you think about it. Or maybe nobody's interested in it. And this thing's over and we're done.
Greg, I'd like to throw in another element to that. And that is, if possible, to avoid actually talking about an increase in the street maintenance fee, I'd be interested in knowing if there is any funds coming to the city through the recent stimulus package, the American Rescue Plan, with money that's going to be coming to local governments. And also along those lines, was Clackamas County declared a emergency? Was there an emergency declaration during the ice storm that entitles us to get reimbursement or emergency funds for all the cleanup that's taking place and possibly even some pavement maintenance? Are those things that are possible sources of revenue to throw into the bucket?
Yeah, so I can follow up on those questions. I have been privy to the fact that we do believe that there is some funding coming to the city through the Recovery Act, and that money will have to be decided on where it goes based on the council. I'd certainly would think that infrastructure would be a great use of those recovery funds for the city. But know that there's always competing interests for those funds, whether it be police or economic development or other items that different groups may champion. Certainly, I think some groups are championing investment in city facilities with some of that, some of those funds, like Robinwood Station or other facilities, or parks, or even our water infrastructure is another infrastructure item that would, I think, qualify for those funds. I don't know the details of what all those, you know, how much that would be or what that would, how that would impact the community. That I don't know if has been totally determined yet. Regarding the, what was the second part of that, was the,
emergency declaration.
Yeah, the emergency declaration for the ice storm. I believe we are currently in negotiation with FEMA and with the Office of Emergency Management at the state level to see how much we might qualify for possible reimbursement. Typically, federal reimbursement is 75% of the local expense or expenditures. So at a maximum, we would get 75% back of what we expended. I think the latest that I saw is we were sitting somewhere near $2 million in various expenditures, the majority of which is in the street fund. That is also a pending item, but know that typically for federal reimbursement on a FEMA emergency management basis, you're looking at probably several years before you see those dollars back, as everything has to be backtraced and audited and corrected, and there's a lot of finance that goes in and finance oversight that goes into sort of collecting every receipt and reviewing everyone to make sure that the funds are for unique to the event and not, you know, displacing local dollars or something that should be locally funded. So very complex process. That's what I have in regards to those two topics at this point.
Okay. Anything, Evan?
My thought on, I feel like it's great to look into what might be coming via stimulus or other federal monies and see if that can, you know, help out the city with issues like this and other issues. I would advocate that it's completely appropriate to look into the fee structure and make sure that there's a fee structure set that puts the city in a long-term position to be able to adequately maintain the infrastructure that we have and that, you know, needs to be upkept. I'm for looking at fee structures and trying to determine what makes sense.
Well, the way to go forward would be to have somebody make a motion to ask the staff to look at it, and then we can move forward. So, Evan, if you think that's something we ought to do, and you want to make a motion, and somebody seconds it, then Lance, in his spare time, can take a look.
and
I'm sure it's at the top of your mind, Lance.
I did switch back to that scenario 3, which Joel had provided earlier, right, that sort of alludes to your point of how do we get to 80. And you know, one thing I would mention is we are spending more now than we had in the past, partially because of the county adopting the additional vehicle registration fee for Clackamas County. Now that, you know, the new Clackamas County commissioner, I think Tootie Smith, sort of challenged that recently in wanting to reverse that fee, but I think she heard a lot of pushback from local communities as well as the other county commissioners in regards to doing something like that, largely because the county itself cannot collect a street fee on your utility bill by state statute. So they are relegated to only being able to collect motor fuel tax or the vehicle registration fee. So the county is using that vehicle registration fee to try and bring their PCI rating up themselves for all the county roads. And the county is, like, Clackamas County has a huge road network, particularly in the rural areas of the county. And a lot of those are in pretty poor condition. You'll see a lot of failed or nearly failing roads in the county, and they've gotten now to where they're pretty much exclusively doing chip and seal on county roads, which is not very car friendly, and creates a lot of chips and pings when they're doing it to your vehicle. But they certainly trying to stretch their dollars as far as they can because they don't have very many dollars.
Okay, so do we have a motion or do we want to do anything with this or move on to our next
item? I had my hand up, sorry.
Oh, I don't see you on my screen, Kim. Go ahead.
I had the hand thingy. Just so that I understand what Lance was saying, that, I mean, we took a hit on the ice storm and that came out of street maintenance fees. We've got a challenged PCI index. And there is federal stimulus money that has come in that can be used in a variety of ways that you're still discovering. So what can we do to advocate for some of that funding to replace what was just lost with the ice storm? You know, because we can't afford to have our roads slip down any lower.
Yeah, I think certainly the way to advocate is through the city council. I mean, this is an advisory board to the council, so, you know, any motion would be a motion to council, whether it's to direct staff to do something or whether it's to advocate that, you know, the city invest in its street network. Those would be good things as we move into the budget discussions over the next couple months.
Greg, what if we were to make it somewhat of a general motion that simply says that the city should strive to achieve a PCI of 80 or 76 or something like that. You know, and obviously that's going to entail having to invest more money, but rather than us say how to get there, that we feel that we should set a goal and the city should figure out the best way to achieve that.
Yeah, that works. You want to make such a motion?
Yeah. I would make a motion that, you know, the city the city should pursue increasing the street PCI to 76.
I think if we go long term, we should go to the 80.
80.
We don't have to beat them up.
Yeah, right. Okay. That's fair enough. So 80. Yeah, that should be a goal. The city should pursue that as a goal.
We have a second?
Second.
The motion is that we recommend to the city council that the city pursue raising the PCI to 80. I got that right, Rich?
Yeah. Whatever means it takes to do so, I guess that's their call.
Okay. Any further discussion on the motion?
Kevin. Yeah, what's 80 mean? It seems like that was it's a nice round number. I want to protect our streets. I want to protect that investment, but is 80 a good number? Is a different number good? I don't understand what your department's pavement preservation kind of philosophy is,
Well, doesn't it go back to that graph, Joel, that you put on the screen that showed, you recall, the line goes here and then it starts to go there,
yeah.
To 80 before you get to the jumping over the cliff number?
Well, there's also a scenario. One of the scenarios that we presented with, and it seems to me it's sort of a maybe middle of the road scenario.
What I could add in here at this point is 80 does sound like a nice round number, but it's not an arbitrary number at all. It's a very good number. It's a very good target to be shooting at. There's very few cities in the state of Oregon that have PCIs over 80. Most of them, the PCIs are in the mid to high 70s. Your friends just to the south of you, city of Wilsonville, has probably one of the highest PCI networks in the entire state. And their PCI is running around 82, 83 right now. But that is a good number, not just because it's a nice round number. It's because that's where it's going to cost you the least to maintain your streets moving forward. So it's not just an arbitrary number. The whole pavement management philosophy is to get you guys into the low 80s, because that's really where you get the most bang for your buck. So.
Joel.
One of the other things I might want to add real quick, and this is probably more for Lance than anybody else, is that one of our clients is the city of Napa, California, and they about 8 years ago had the same discussion we were involved with, and they also wanted to get their PCIs up into the low 80s. And so they actually went to council with that, and they were mandated by council to continue the pavement management process and to move the city in that direction. So if you wanted to, Lance, if you wanted to maybe get a hold of the city of Napa, I can give you the gentleman's name down there, and I can email that up to you, and you can contact him and just see kind of how they did it. So you're not kind of reinventing the wheel. I think that committee and that council put a plan in place, and I think they'd probably be glad to share that plan with you guys.
Okay, we're getting on in the evening. Any further discussion before we vote?
Yeah, I've got more. I'm sorry, Greg. I'm not trying to be obstructionist. So that was super helpful. Joel, I want to make sure that you feel like that 80 gets us to a long-term kind of minimum maintenance type structure.
Yeah. Yes. Cool. Yes, definitely.
Okay, and then I have a question on the motion. The motion, my understanding of the motion is to get to that number of 80. Do we want to add anything to the motion to, like, ask people to look into what fee structure that might take?
I think it was Rich's thought process anyway. I'm speaking for Rich. He can say it.
I'm leaving it pretty wide open so that the idea is that that's the goal, and they're going to have to evaluate all the possibilities of how to get there. And so it doesn't exclude or include that specific item, but I think that would be part and parcel of what will have to occur just in pursuing a PCI of 80. So the answer is no, Evan. I don't think I need to expand upon it any more than I have.
And I would second that you don't get that detail, because You know, when you're scoping out a charter or a problem statement like that, if you put the wheels on the bus for people and they fall off, they're just going to stop. You're going to have to continue to provide very linear detail. So I like the breadth of that, Rich. I think it puts the onus to the experts to figure that out. Present options.
Okay. Anything else from anyone?
Just ask, what was the motion again?
The motion that we're voting on is a recommendation of the City Council to work towards raising the PCI for West Lynn Streets to 80. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Aye.
Opposed, nay. Okay, it appears the ayes have it. And Lance, there you go. We made a motion. We're moving forward. Thank you, Joel. Appreciate it. That was great information. That's at least what I've always wanted to hear for it. So wonderful. Lance, the next two items were tentative. Are they non-tentative? Or we had tolling update and bike ped. Are those not happening this evening?
Not tonight.
Okay. That's fine.
Those are trying to coordinate with ODOT staff to see if we can get them to come to a TAB meeting and give an update on those topics. I think Morgan's pursuing that with ODOT and might be able to get something together in the next meeting.
Okay. Well, then that moves us to item number four, the capital projects update.
So in the interest of time, I would say that The capital projects, there was a staff update to council on all of our GO bond projects I can't remember the exact date, but just a recent city council meeting. So if anybody wanted to look or review that, that council meeting, they can. The other thing I would mention to the group is all of our bond projects are listed on the city's website with detailed background information on each project, so you can see what the status is of that. I did mention our road project. We are putting the final sort of touches on our design for our road maintenance project. That should be out to bid here pretty shortly, awarded by council probably in the first meeting of May is what I'm hoping for, and then they'll be able to start work directly after that with whoever the bidder or the contractor is on the project. So that is moving forward. Again, all of our bond projects are in various states. I'm actually reviewing some of the work for Highway 43 right now that ODOT's working on. So just a ton of capital projects going on as far as the major projects are with the bond projects. I'd be happy to answer any questions in that regard.
Any questions of Lance on the capital project program? Okay, then we move to item five. We have any board discussion or announcements tonight?
Well, I don't know. Maybe I missed my opportunity, Lance. Can you confirm that I heard rumor, maybe it's fact, that the council did reverse its decision on the Main Street parking, the back-end parking? Is that correct?
So the council at their last meeting, and that was the meeting that I did the update, did decide to go to head-in angle parking for the Main Street area between 10th and 16th on Willamette Falls Drive. We are working with the contractor right now to schedule that work, and it's pretty much strictly weather dependent. It has to be dry to put down the thermoplastic pavement marking. So that is happening.
So okay.
With
hand up. Oh, Kim, you had your hand up. Oh, no. No, Kim. Okay, who else?
No, Evan did. I'll go after Evan.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt. With the change of those striping directions, Will there be like little like motorcycle pockets since like at the corners where things are designed to be backed in? Now there'll be like a little triangle for the. Does that make sense? What I'm asking?
Sure. So they'll be. They're not officially striped as motorcycle spaces, but and the design was intentionally oriented to where the council could reverse their decision one way or the other. So right now there's a little pocket at each corner going the wrong sort of opposite way. If you believe backing angle's wrong, and then there's the now with the reversal, there'll be a pocket in the other direction in that same block. So there will be those little spots that are sort of striped out. Interesting story. You know, when you talk about access out there, the sidewalks are so wide. The new sidewalks really facilitate on-street dining and outdoor dining, but in weather like we are currently experiencing, there's not a lot of outdoor dining, and of course COVID makes it difficult as well. I actually did witness myself somebody driving down the sidewalk, and so we are adding bollards to each of the driveways to try and channel people to the right place on the street. So that project is interesting one, and anything that can happen has happened out there or will happen, and we continue to address it as things come up. So I do anticipate continuing refinement in that corridor over the next few months. So.
Thanks for the update.
Kim, your turn now.
On the announcements, I will put this in the chat here. There is a couple of things coming up on this bike ped bridge before we have our next meeting. So they have an online open house and survey that starts March 29th and goes to April 13th because they're narrowing down the alignments. Because this will impact our plans on this side where that pedestrian bike bridge alignment is chosen. They will have a virtual public meeting on Tuesday, April 6th, and some other team meetings. So there's opportunities to see what's going on with the bike ped bridge. And the other question I had is if everybody received the information I sent out about FreeWire for that portable charging station where you can charge electric vehicles from. Okay, I don't know. Did you didn't get it, Richard, Greg?
I don't know. You sent us something, but I didn't think that was it.
Okay. Well, because I don't know if they updated all the emails yet for the new members, but I can send it to you. I sent it to the Sustainability Board, but FreeWire was a company I had seen in a green transportation expo like a year and a half ago. Mm-hmm. And it looks like some small push cart ice cream truck. You can power two EVs for the day, but it could be a very useful thing for temporary charging for electric vehicles. We could use it at events, like for vendors, instead of them firing up their propane tanks for food trucks. And it could have been used really well in this last ice storm. So for emergency backup and other city events, it's the type of thing that's best if it's used all the time. You don't want to just use it during an emergency. But I'll send that to the transportation board to look at, but I wanted to see if there was interest in having a presentation from that company to just understand better how it could be used. Cause I think it could be shared with parks and with public works. If you haven't seen it, it's completely news to you. So,
all right, why don't you send it out? We'll take a look and I can talk with.
Okay. Because it's a lot better if you have somebody from the company talk about, you know, how it's best used.
Okay. Any other announcements?
Oh, and I did.
I have one. Oh, go ahead.
Greg, I was just going to mention that I did see that our Metro Councilor Christine Lewis has jumped into our meeting. So just want to acknowledge her presence.
Yeah. Welcome.
Thank you. Just a fly on the wall tonight. President of Willamette Neighborhood, thank you.
Thank you for sitting in. I did want to mention that, and Christine will know this. I'm tomorrow, Metro TPAC's going to have a presentation on congestion pricing. So if any of you are interested, I plan to sit in on that. Might even be able to get some PDHs for my engineer's license. But if any of you are interested, you know, that's this whole notion of how we might fund transportation, certainly outside of West Lynn. But that's Greg, at 9 o'clock that, tomorrow morning.
Is that a buzzword for tolling? Is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah, I suppose.
Okay.
It's how he's
sure
you're going to pay for it when you're plugging up the road, Rich. So, anyway, I plan to sit in on it. Actually, I'm curious to see where they've gone with it. Any other announcements? Okay. Do we have any public comment? Christine, you're kind of our public. Did you have anything you wanted to say or just sat in to listen?
I don't have anything. Just sat in to listen. Thank you.
All righty. Well, I have nothing else on the agenda. So given that, we're going to adjourn our March meeting. Thank you, everyone.
Well done, Greg. Thank you much.
See you guys next month, I guess.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.
Take care. Oh.